Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We're diving into the Miami Dolphins today, and there is some notable offensive change. So I'm not sure how much of what happened last year is going to happen again. They were eighth in terms of passing designed plays, which was 65.5%, 7.0 yards per attempt, 23rd in the league, 20th in terms of touchdown rate at 4.29%, 5.4 sack rate, that was median, and they had scramble rate, it was 8th in the league. Again, there was a mix between Fitzpatrick and Tua there. They ran play action 21st in the league, that was 24.3%, only 6.5 yards per attempt on play action, that was negative 9.2% improvement. So I was 30th in the league. So pretty bad in terms of that. There's going to be some change that I think's important. Specifically, I think the offensive coordinator change is going to be one thing. And you have much better supporting cast for Tua. So I think between those two things, I think it's going to be a notable distinction there. And one thing I found is actually reading through Warren Sharp's book, 32nd in terms of receiver separation last year. So you bring in Will Fuller, you bring in Jalen Waddle. I know that Albert Wilson was out last year, but he has actually shown pretty well in camp. You know, and he's been one that I don't think he's like a big time difference maker or anything like that, but as a contributor, he might be able to add something there. So I do think there's a new set of improved weapons, and Parker has been, you know, not really a big time separator. So I think it's an interesting set of weapons. We'll see. You know, you're dealing with an injured Will Fuller at present, and Jalen Waddle has got some a little bit of wear and tear he's dealing with right now, and he's a rookie. And he wasn't a productive college player. So, yes, you have essentially better separation. I'm not sure, like, how much of that comes to fruition. This could be a Miami offense where it looks a lot like the Giants, where, hey, you invested all this assets in your offense, and, like, it could not look – it could be in a situation where it doesn't look substantially better. I think the offensive coordinator situation is interesting. You got co-offensive coordinators. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work. You basically are putting in Eric Studsville, and he was their running backs coach the past 2 years there under Brian Flores. And then you actually have George Gotze as well, and he's been the tight end coach the past 2 years. So that's interesting. You know, and he Gotze at least comes from, you know, he did the New England, Houston, Detroit, Miami circle. So he's worked for, you know, a lot of the New England branch guys. He worked for Belichick, obviously, in New England. Then he worked for Brian. He's obviously worked for Brian Flores now. Bill O'Brien in Houston, and Matt Patricia as a quarterback's coach in Detroit. So he's basically on the Belichick tree. So I think it's going to be interesting. Again, I look at this a little bit. I have a skeptical eye of coaches. And I know that Miami's become a little bit of a darling in terms of their coaching staff, in terms of their front office. I know people think a lot of you know, Brian Flores and the front office, that they've done a lot of bright things. They're a little bit of a process type team. Listen, they've consistently outproduced their production. In terms of, they've had some positive variance. You know, they, like last year, they had a quote, really good defense. But when you sort of delved into it, like, they actually were like 24th in terms of net yards against, but first in interceptions. Like, you know, so they gave up, like, you know, it's been positive variance for them, is what I would say. Like, they have outproduced what they've actually done in terms of their outcome has been better than their actual, you know, the sum of all the production, I guess, is the easiest way to say that. And at the same time, like, you've had a situation where you've got, you know, he keeps churning through offensive coordinators. So last year it was Chan Gailey. You know, the prior year it was Chad O'Shea, and then they actually fired him. And, you know, so he's basically had three offensive coordinators in 3 years, and now you got multiple play callers. Like, it doesn't seem – I've worked in dysfunctional workplaces. Like, I don't know if this is a dysfunctional workplace, but this has the indicia of a dysfunctional workplace. And you just keep going through things, and you don't seem to be doing – all that well in terms of like retaining and whether it's hiring or what. I don't know. I have a little bit of skepticism about Miami from that aspect. So that's just, you know, one thing I think it's important to note. On the Tua front, there is some interesting stuff that PFF has done. They did some Bayesian updating, and Tua's updates about the 25th percentile in terms of quarterbacks. I think it was like over 2,000 dropbacks is basically the subset that they graded. That's about where he sort of projects at this point, so that's not great. That was at the Matt Hasselbeck level, so if you're sort of thinking historical comps, 50 percentile is Derek Carr. So Herbert right now projects just above the 50th percentile, and that's using basically their PFF grades and their draft pedigree at this point. Burrow's about 60th percentile, and that is largely, there's a big difference between, you know, 5 and 6 in the draft and 1. So according to their data. So I just think that's notable there to look at. In terms of their offensive line, by the way, Tua only pressured 29.1% of the time. It's 28th in the league. I think there was like 39 qualifiers. So, again, that was actually pretty good. And from a clean pocket, 6.7 yards per attempt, 34th. So, again, that's not great. You could blame some of that on maybe the scheme, some of that on some of the separation and that sort of stuff, but that's not a great stat. The offensive line has some questions. So Michael Dieter didn't really play last year. He's their center. Liam Eichenberg is a second round pick. He's going to be the left guard. It looks like it's what's projected. Left tackle last year, Austin Jackson, drafted in the first round, performed 83rd out of 93 tackles. So yeah, that's not great. Robert Hunt, played right tackle a bunch last year, supposed to play right guard this year, 51st. In terms of right tackles and pass grade, that's not great. Jesse Davis played all over the offensive line this year. Left tackle, right guard, right tackle, 61st in terms of PFF grade. So there's a lot of skepticism about the offensive line, I think is the kind way to put it, all told. So additions that they made, they actually brought in a couple of reserve offensive linemen that could potentially compete. They lost their center, was Ted Karras. They lost their left guard, Eric Flowers. So we'll see. Brought in Jalen Waddle. Like I said, they brought in Eichenberg in the second round. And they brought in Hunter Long. I don't know if I mentioned this. I think Hunter Long's a little banged up, too. So just sort of note that as well. Turning to their receivers from last year, Devontae Parker led them with 100 targets, 1.75 yards per route run. So that's pretty good. 18.9 target percentage. That was pretty effective. Mike Gesicki, 1.6 yards per route run. He had 15.5% of their target share. I'm really interested in sort of what their projection from him is. You know, I think the biggest question here, undoubtedly, is Tua. I do think a secondary one might be Gesicki in terms of what he might offer at the position. He played the second most pass snaps in the slot last year, only behind Firkser at a tight end. 67.4% of his snaps were there. He was out wide another 19.7%, and he played in line only 12.9%. And just to give you an idea, him and Firkser were like the two least in line guys in the league. Jared Cook right behind them. They played 10% of their snaps. Firkser did just over 10%, and Gesicki just under 13% of the snaps in line. So that just gives you an idea of what like a Pitts, like, even if you said that Pitts is like, hey, he's going to be a receiver, like, he's probably still getting enough. Like, it's clear. It's a clear distinction in terms of like what the difference between a receiver and a tight end is. I just think that conversation's always pretty, Just pretty notable in terms of, oh, he's going to get recategorized. Like, it's, I think it's actually incredibly difficult to get recategorized. And Marquez Colston was one that that happened with. And it basically was simply because, like, he literally took no inline snaps. Like, it was pretty wild. You know, he came in as a tight end and basically played 100% of his snaps either in the slot or out wide. Gesicki, fourth in ADOT last year. 11.6. That's behind only Gronkowski, Jared Cook, and Dan Arnold actually led an ADOT last year. Yards per route run, Gesicki was 1.6. That's actually 11th in the league amongst qualifiers. So again, he's been pretty good. And you know, I think that's, he really came on too. He's 15th in terms of contested catch rate. He really struggled to begin his career. I think he's a notable one in terms of, you know, improvement and really growing. He grew pretty significantly. So, yeah, I'll be interested in him and what his secondary market could be. Like, he's one that, I don't know if he's a tag guy next year or, you know, what their plans are with him, if they're going to extend him in camp. But he's definitely one I'm pretty interested in terms of what they're going to do with him overall. So, yeah, a little deep dive there into that, into the because I think he's an important guy. At that portion of the position in like the late tight end one category. Outside of that, there wasn't a ton of guys that received a lot of targets, honestly. Like, it was pretty cobbled together, which is probably part of the problem. Jakeem Grant was their third most targeted guy, 52 targets. But again, he was actually pretty good, 1.59 yards per route run. It's decent. Miles Gaskin, 1.84 yards per route run. That's just outstanding for a running back. So he was just short of 9% of their passing game. So see, maybe that grows. And again, that's only 10 games too. So in a big sample, I mean, you know, like if he could conceivably double his production, I don't think that's totally unreasonable projection. I mean, you're looking somewhere in the range of like 80 catches, somewhere in the range of, you know, 750 yards. Like, I don't think that's unreasonable given how productive he was. And yeah, we'll see how the offense funnels, but like if he stayed healthy, man, like that could be a really interesting player. You know, Preston Williams, down in terms of his production. He's another one that, you know, as much as you want to fall in love with UDFA, flip them, right? Base rates. Shaheen is another one down the line here. Again, there's so much change going on in this offense that, there's not a ton here that's going to carry over to this year. I think that's maybe the biggest takeaway from this is you do expect a bunch of change, and do expect things to look differently again with some instability. And what's this year look like compared to next year, right? Fuller's on a 1-year deal. We'll see how that all works out, but I don't know if they have a true answer at wide receiver long-term. We'll see with Waddle, but, you know, I know that they've received a lot of accolades, but I'm a little skeptical in terms of some of the stuff, some of the decisions that they've made. So, so we'll see ultimately, when you look at the analytics of Dynasty, you know, where these guys come in terms of their rankings, Tua comes in quarterback 17, that's 502. You know, that's, I think probably, aggressive, or I think that's optimistic in terms of some of the guys going around him or after him. Again, maybe he has a wider range of outcomes and that's why he's going there. But I do think that some of the Bayesian stuff that PFF has done has given me reason to be skeptical on Tua. Miles Gaskin, running back 25, 802. It's pretty reasonably priced too. But that's behind Chris Carson. He's basically kind of on that line of guys that are, you know, 1-year guys or not. Like, he's kind of on that line. So, or 2-year guys or not, right? He's basically one of the first guys that's not in a potential 2-year window at present, or that I would project there in terms of my tiers. Malcolm Brown's another one I've added. I know this isn't supposed to be a running back show, but everything comes back to running back position. He's 78 overall. I've been adding him quite a bit, as aggressively as I can, in sort of waivers and that sort of stuff. I have some rookie drafts and stuff that have free agents that go off in August, and he's been a target. Will Fuller, 49th. That seems like a target, 1202. Jalen Waddle is at 707. He's 25.5. It seems like an avoid at the cost. He's going right behind Deontay Johnson. Give me Deontay Johnson there over him. He's going behind Robert, ahead of Robert Woods, for example. That seems pretty quizzical to me. And then you got Gesicki, tight end 11. You know, and that, or ahead of Irv Smith. I think that's fair. He's ahead of Evan Ingram. I think that one could go poorly. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, that's, I think it's an interesting one there. When you look at some of the projections over at Football Guys, we've got Tua, at about cost, so 17th. He's ahead of Matt Ryan. He's ahead of Daniel Jones and Ben. And then he's behind Carr, Lawrence, Cousins, Burrow. That's kind of the range of the position that you're looking at. I think that might be a little optimistic. I think I would take, I think I'd probably take a couple of the guys after him, over him. Just, I think they're in probably better situations and they're probably better quarterbacks. Myles Gaskin, 23 over at Football Guys. Malcolm Brown, he's at 53. And notably, Malcolm Brown projected about 90 carries. Myles Gaskin projected at 196. So this isn't even a, we're not even projecting like an Arizona situation where it's a split in the backfield. It's 2-1, which I think's notable and different to look at. Will Fuller projected 43. We project 14 games. I don't think that that's, I'm more aggressive than that. You know, if he plays 14 games, I mean, maybe. But again, it's interesting because you see other guys around him. And it's, you know, he's behind Odell Beckham Jr. on the same game projection. He's behind Mike Williams getting a couple more games. So Deebo Samuel, he's projected behind. And I just think he's got a wider, he's definitely got a higher ceiling than all those guys. We saw he was like wide receiver 8 last year. Waddle's projected right with him. Same amount of receiving yards. I mean, I would take Waddle. Fuller over Waddle pretty clearly this year. So, you know, we'll see how that all works out. But I think that's probably shooting Fuller a little low. And he is suspended a game, so we'll have to, you know, you have to adjust for that. And he is hurt right now and banged up. So we'll see. But I think if healthy, I think we like him more than that. Gesicki, tight end 16. I just think he comes in above that. And again, you're projecting guys above him that, you know, frankly, you're projecting growth from people. Are you projecting Jonnu Smith, I think, at about a career high by 10% in terms of receiving yards, which is a bit much to me given the changing offense and all that. So, I would have him higher. Yeah, he's behind Ingram, which makes an interesting Football Guys to AOD RDP conversion there, right? That's one you could say, hey, that's an inefficiency in terms of all of that. And when you just look, like, I mean, Gesicki had 703 in terms of receiving yards. He had 570 the year before that in 15 games in both of those seasons. And we're projecting more games and basically, you know, a regression on yards. So that's interesting. That's definitely interesting. I would have him, I think, more aggressively up the board. And again, so much of it's touchdowns, right? If he, you know, if we have him projected at 4.5 touchdowns, if he scores 6, like if he scored 7, the difference between that and where he is basically he would be tight end 10. So again, there's just a ton of difference there and ton of variance. But again, if he had 200 more yards, he would be tight end 8. So the touchdown things is a big difference. I definitely think there's ranges of outcomes for here to him produce top 7 projection for sure. So he could be, again, this is one of those situations that I hearken this back to the Giants because it's very similar. It really is similar where you've got kind of an okay guy that's there in terms of Sterling Shepard with the Giants. That's Devontae Parker with the Dolphins. You bring in a free agent. Again, it's a different in terms of construct of contract and longevity and commitment, but you bring in a guy who frankly has injury concerns and lo and behold, he's banged up, right? That they're both banged up, right? In terms of Fuller and Galladay. And then you bring in a receiver who wasn't that productive in college, and you know, you have questions about how that progresses. I think the reports out on Waddle are better than the reports out on Tony, but are you really expecting him to be a 1,000-yard receiver? And then all that comes back to, like, hey, the most established guy here is the tight end. And I think there's a scenario where, I don't know if he leads them in receiving yards, but I think, like, that's not an unreasonable outcome based on all of it. So I do think there's upside there for Gesicki, and maybe he's not necessarily a sexy pick, but I think he could absolutely, I mean, he's projected at 16. If he was half of that, it wouldn't shock me. So I do think, like, that's a floor. That seems very, very much like a floor projection to me. So, yeah, there's that. So that's pretty much it in terms of the passing game there. For the Miami, it goes a little bit longer. I want to incorporate some other stuff, too, from outside, just because we don't have a ton about the offense. We don't really know what it's going to look like. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue to embrace the variance. We'll talk again very soon.